Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1971. The topic is training, and the title is Programming Tips for Each Goal, Mobility, Fat Loss, Muscle Growth, and Strength. I was talking with one of my business clients recently. They're working on kind of progressing their own goals. They want to progress their aesthetics. They want to have a mixture of strength and athletics. They want to be like basically everything. Who doesn't? But they want to be more muscular than the average person, leaner than the average person, stronger than the average person, but more physically fit to do like jumping and running and agility stuff more than the average person. So it's actually going to work out pretty well. They are an ex-college athlete, so they'll be fine. We're also talking about improving the services that their gym offers. So they own a facility and they train people themselves, but they actually have trainers, and that's kind of where they're transitioning. They're transitioning from being their like they are their business where they were a trainer to now they have other trainers earning the money for the facility. They're training here or there, but they're more so now like the face of the business and getting to do the operations of the business. So it's a kind of a switchover for them. So we've been talking about that process. Now, in a recent discussion we had last week, we were discussing programming tips that they could teach their trainers because they want to implement an aspect of education into the training sessions. They want their training sessions to be different than the typical industry experience where you come, you chit-chat with the trainer, they put you through some what feels like kind of random stuff, and they're on their phone half the time and chit-chatting with you half the time about nonsense, and then you leave. So they want to offer a little bit something better than that. They want to have some educational aspects. So we've been talking about some different elements on what we can include in their programming. So I'm helping them by writing templates for the trainers to follow in their programming. So this trainer, he doesn't have to worry about whether his trainers are doing good programming or not. They have the freedom to kind of do their own, but he wants to provide a base of programming structures that they can select from so he can kind of be a personal training director, make sure they're doing good content, and that's been super fun to kind of go through and develop. Last week when we were talking about that, we were talking about three programming tips that we would want to include into the programming for their trainers that would make their programming more efficient and stand out in the sense that it's going to push better progressions and better like client experience. I thought it would be fun to share a variation of what we talked about in a more podcast-friendly version, but we're going to go through three tips that you can use for programming for mobility, fat loss, muscle growth, and strength. So let's look at mobility. Three things that we discussed when we talked about programming for mobility was don't change levels, pair opposites, and pair hard and easy movements. So let's go through that. Don't change levels. This is basically if you have somebody doing a group of exercises, whether it's two exercises back to back or three exercises, don't make them get up and down, up and down, up and down. I've talked about this a little bit before, and it might seem counterintuitive for mobility that if you have them doing something standing, then something down on the ground, then something standing, then down on the ground, it might seem to be helpful for mobility to have the person actually getting up and down, because that's part of what you would want mobility for, is being able to move yourself and to do tasks such as getting up and down. The reason why we don't want to do that, though, is it's not a really good client experience. People tend to get frustrated when they have to get up and down, up and down. They'll exert energy in an exercise, but when they have to exert energy between exercises or to get something set up, this is a funny analogy, but we all, when we're loading a plate-loaded machine, and like think you're doing leg press, maybe you're doing a chest press, you're doing some kind of plate-loaded machine in the gym. Which plates do you grab? The freaking closest ones, right? Like you grab the closest plates to you. you're actually frustrated and annoyed if the machine you're on doesn't have like a 25-pound plate, or it doesn't have a 10-pound plate. It doesn't have a plate you need. It can be frustrating and annoying to walk 10 feet further to a different machine to grab a plate from that machine to use on your machine. We all experience this. We all get annoyed when we have to, quote-unquote, exercise to exercise. When we have to exert energy other than the actual exercises we want. So one of the trainers that we were talking about, he noticed that that trainer was having this issue. They were having their clients get up and down all the time. And he could see the people were like pushing off their knee. They're leaning on a piece of equipment. They look, you know, they're kind of like rolling their eyes and making exaggerated movements. And so he knew as soon as I said, this is something we want to avoid. He goes, oh yeah, you know, trainer so-and-so, I saw their client doing this and blah, blah, blah. So it was cool that he caught on immediately and already recognized the value of that. So that phrase again is don't change levels. If you have people do like standing up movements, keep them all standing up. If you make them get down on the ground to do like different drills, keep them just down on the ground. now these are all recommendations. You certainly don't have to, you know, follow this. It's a choice. But if you have people do it this way, you're going to find that they're a little more willing to do a better effort into the things they're doing. Whereas if you have them getting up and down, up and down, up and down, they tend to half-ass some of the stuff they're doing because they're tired and annoyed from getting up and down. The second thing we have is to pair opposites. And what we mean by this is there's a terminology called the antagonist. When we're working a muscle on like one side of the joint, so let's say we're stretching, since this is mobility goals, say we're stretching to open and strengthen the hip flexor. The antagonist is the glute muscles. So what's the thing on the other side of the joint? You know, if you think of like a bicep curl, the antagonist would be a tricep extension. So they work kind of on opposing sides of the joint. One way to help improve mobility and strength in a targeted muscle is to work the opposing muscle, the antagonist. So to open the hip flexors, a good pairing with hip flexor movements would be anything that helps you contract the glutes. So a glute bridge. If you have them doing hip flexors, maybe you're doing lying leg raises to work on strengthening the hip flexor. Well, in between the lying leg raises, have them do glute bridges. By contracting the glute, they're forcing the joint to open up more on the opposing side, which would be the hip flexor side, and that creates more of a stretch. So pairing antagonists, pairing opposites, helps on each side of that equation. So it gives you extra volume into the antagonist, and the stronger and more mobile the antagonist, the more mobility and less kind of tightened it down the opposing muscle is going to be as well. So it's really like a synergistic type relationship is when you train or target a muscle, train the antagonist as well. Another example of this would be if somebody has bad posture, maybe their shoulders are rolled forward and inward, and you notice that their chest is very tight. They have a lot of front shoulder pain anytime they're trying to do a chest press. Well, train the back. If you do back rows where they have to stretch and contract their shoulder blades, that can actually help pull and open up the musculature that's tight on the front side of the shoulder joint. So that's another good example. The third thing we have is to pair easy and hard. If you're going to challenge your clients with something they're not good at and or you know they don't like, you're like, ah, dang, this is something that's really good for them. I know they don't really like it, but I want to see if I can kind of sneak it in. they're going to notice, by the way, so you can't really sneak it in. But pairing it with something they do well with and or that they actually like can help. This reminds me of a concept when you're giving somebody advice. It's called a shit sandwich. Basically. So I try not to swear too. I don't know. I probably swear quite a bit in this podcast when I get fired up. But a shit sandwich is when you give somebody like you praise or a compliment, then you tell them the kind of constructive feedback, and then you give them another compliment. So, for example, you might be like, you've been doing really good with the adherence to the program. I really like that you're staying in the gym. You're getting your workouts in. That's awesome. Now, when we do the workout, we do want to make sure, you know, if the sets are, you know, 8 to 10, we're not just getting to 8 and stopping. Or we're not just getting to 10 and stopping. We want the working sets to be true all-out effort. I think if we re-emphasize that and push into that for the next month, that's going to really help you get better results, really, really, really pushing the intensity of those working sets. So you've been doing great. You've been in the gym, super consistent. Love what you're doing with your food. Just adding in that that intensity into the working sets will really help. So there you go. So that's kind of a shit sandwich. Is you said some positive things. You got the thing in there that you really wanted them to focus on. Then you ended with a little bit of positive things, right? So that would be a good concept to use for programming. When you have an element that you think they're not going to be good at, and or you know they're not good at, and you know it frustrates them, pair it with something that they're like, pair it with something that they're good at, so that way they have a sense of success, a sense of somewhat of enjoyment into that workout. And that can be very common in mobility workouts. People tend not to like, if they have, like, say, bad knees or, like, bad back, whatever, like, tight hips, they're going to hate whatever targets that because it's targeting something very weak and something that's been stiff, something that they probably have avoided for a long time, which is why it's freaking weak and stiff. So pairing it with something that they'll like, pairing it with something that they're good at is very helpful to improve the experience. So those are three tips for mobility. Don't change levels, pair opposites, pair hard and easy. Now, when we think of fat loss, it's important, three tips we have is volume with intensity. Don't avoid low reps. And place weighted exercise performance above cardio in prioritization. So let's go through those. Volume with intensity. What this means is we want the person to do a lot of work when we're looking for fat loss. We do want to burn a lot of calories in the training, but we want to have that with the intensity, with challenge in the movements. We don't want to be busy for nothing. And I'll often see this quite a bit. This is going to sound like a little bit of an attack. It is what it is. So if you're annoyed by this, look at a way to maybe like try to see it from my point of view. So what I'm about to say is often people really enjoy light weight to barely moderate weighted group classes and like circuity events. So they might be doing like bodyweight squats, kettlebell swings, then, you know, goblet hold, kettlebell step up. But they're using a 10-pound kettlebell. Who gives a crap? The 10-pound kettlebell isn't going to really do anything. Now, if they're doing that as a progression where it kicked their butt to do bodyweight style movements, they're at a 10-pound kettlebell now, that's freaking awesome, and they have the intention to continue to progress in the weight load, great. But what's more common is people will do moderate, and moderate would be like heavier than what people typically do. Usually it's lightweight, and they'll just do busyness. So they might... you can see pick any four random exercises, put them together back to back to back, and that's what most group classes are. So again, I'm being a little bit of a jerk face. They're great group classes, but I do see it all the time. And unfortunate, like those clients will come to me and they're like, oh, I've been going to the gym regularly. I've been eating healthy. Why haven't I been seeing great results? And I'm like, well, everything you're doing is submaximal. You're going to the gym and you're sweating and you're out of breath, but the weights you're using aren't heavy at all. You're not really getting a significant enough amount of muscular tissue stress. So they'll say they're trying hard, and I agree. They are trying hard. But what their perception of hard isn't hard enough yet. So they lacked progression, and that's often because it's not taught in the class. The class teaches you just be busy for 30 minutes. And it's like, that's not enough. That's very beginnerish level stuff. We need to progress past that. And that's exactly what this trainer wants to do with his gym, is he wants a gym that doesn't have just basic boring crap that people don't see results in 3 to 6 months, and they wonder what's going on, then they leave his gym. So we want to be busy, we want to burn calories, but we want to have intensity and we want to have a significant enough weight load in what we do. How we can accomplish that is through exercise pairings. We want to pair exercises. If we're doing back-to-back exercises or circuits or group of movements, we want to pair them with two specific things in mind. One is, if you can, pair non-competing movements. So this would be pairing movements that have opposing functions in the same kind of grouping of the lower of the body. So for example, if you have two lower body movements, do one that is predominantly a knee bend with an upright torso, and then one that's predominantly a hip hinge. So for example, a kettlebell swing into a step up is actually a pretty good pairing. Pretty funny that my subconscious thought of that pairing. But a kettlebell swing is a hinge, and then a step up is a knee bend. Your torso stays pretty much upright the entire time. The reason why that's helpful is the hinge works mostly your posterior chain. It works on your lower back stability and control, positional control, your glutes and your hamstrings. Whereas the step up works on your quadriceps, and it's going to work specifically on the musculature around the knee joint, whereas the swings would not have. They would work mostly around the hip joint. So pairing those would help you be able to do better in each movement because they use different sets of muscles. Whereas if you had a hinge paired with another hinge, or a knee-focused movement paired with another knee-focused movement, they're not going to perform that second thing very well because they've already exhausted those muscles. So we want to pair non-competing movements. You can do that while staying, you know, if with lower body movements, or staying with upper body, staying within singular kind of muscle groups. But you can also do it with full body workouts. That's a great way to burn more calories, and that's a great way to get a greater training volume in throughout the week as well. So it depends on the frequency of training, like how often they work out. But full body workouts for fat loss are great because you can increase the performance and intensity per movement. But since you're doing the whole body, you don't get sufficient weekly volume of working sets in a single or even within two workouts. You often need three or four. So that allows you to train the muscles more often, which creates more muscle damage, which actually helps burn more calories during the recovery periods between workouts. The second little tip, so we had non-competing movements. Selecting non-competing movements is a great way to have volume with intensity. Another tip is highs and lows, meaning we want to vary high and low the reps that we use, the maybe weight load intensity. So you can have them do a really heavy, five rep max kind of like hack squat or leg press, and then do 20 steps of body weight walking lunges. So you have five paired with 20, right? So a heavy low rep thing paired with a lighter high rep thing. You can also do highs and lows in regards to intensity. You can have them do maybe a really heavy deadlift. Maybe they can healthy enough to deadlift. You can have them do like a 3 to 5 rep max deadlift, but then pair that with variations of glute bridges. That would be a great way to squeeze the glutes so they can focus on the glutes in the deadlift. It actually helps to release some tension in the lower back between the deadlifts. But the glute bridges aren't very high intense, but the deadlift is super high intense. So the super high intense exercise, if you try to do another high intensity thing afterwards, it's not going to go very well because they're exhausted and they had to get ramped up for that deadlift. So you do something low, like low intense, but still good volume, still helpful, which would be the glute bridges. So we want to use non-competing exercises in highs and lows so that way we can create better circuits and better exercise pairings. That way we can maximize volume and intensity in the workouts. Second tip we have for fat loss is don't avoid low reps. Increasing strength, like doing lower repetition things, which typically means they're going to be heavier, that will help you increase strength. Increasing strength helps you be able to lift more weights and heavier weights for more reps over time. So over time, you can actually increase your caloric burn in your workouts which is great. And it helps to improve stabilization because you get stronger at stabilizing weights. That makes you more safer and more efficient in movements, which then allows you to increase weight loads and make weight-loaded progressions. It also can help improve hormones. The heavier we lift, we tend to get a good testosterone, like natural testosterone response, and that would be helpful for females as well. And you can help improve confidence. As people get stronger, they see weight loads moving and up and increasing over time. That builds confidence, that improves adherence to the program, that improves attendance. So that way they come to the training sessions if they feel like they're actually making progress and they can see that happening. They're better adherent to the auxiliary aspects as well. So they'll do better with their nutrition if they know their training is progressing. The other thing is that lifting heavier weights, like with lower reps, it helps to increase muscle damage, which increases our post-workout caloric usage. So we burn more calories while we're recovering from the workouts because our body has to fix and repair that muscle tissue. And it helps increase our basal metabolic rate over time. Basal metabolic rate is how many calories you burn just existing, being alive. It's also called the resting metabolic rate. And that would just be how many calories your body burns just doing normal daily functions. The more muscle mass you have, the more calories you burn at rest. Muscle actually requires caloric energy to stay alive. So over time, if you're lifting heavier weights, you're building some muscle tissue, you're going to burn more calories while just resting. That helps you get leaner faster and or be able to eat more so you're not so freaking hungry all the time while maintaining a good, healthy body composition. Then the third tip for fat loss is place weighted exercise performance above cardio in prioritization. Cardio can be equally effective for fat loss, whether we're good at it or not. And it's actually easier when you're not as good at cardio. If you're good at cardio, meaning you've developed a really good cardiovascular base, and or you're totally fresh and you have all the energy that you just walked through the door, and now you have to do cardio to a point of exhaustion, you have to do a really high amount. Comparatively to if you were doing cardio after weight training, you're already exhausted, you're already tired, so immediately, or much quicker, into the cardio, you'll get into a stressed state, which helps burn more calories and create the stress that we want from the cardio to facilitate body change. If we do cardio when we're exhausted, it is just as effective as when we're not exhausted, and it's actually easier because we don't have to do so much to get us to a state of exhaustion. Whereas weight training, if you do it exhausted, it is not as beneficial. You will not lift as heavy weights, you will not be able to create as much muscle damage, and you're at a higher risk of injury. So it's important to prioritize weight training and do it when you're more fresh in the workouts than it is to do cardio when you're more fresh. Most people, when they think of fat loss, they think of maximizing their cardio, and then they just kind of add some weight training, if they do at all, just here and there. They'll do it as like a secondary thing, like, oh yeah, I guess I'm supposed to do this, I'll just blah, 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 putsy through this. No. Weight training is the key. Like, that's what you want to focus in. So you want to give your best to weight training and then give what's left to cardio, not the other way around. So those were our three tips for fat loss: volume with intensity, don't avoid low reps, and place weighted exercise performance above cardio in prioritization. Next subject we have is, next goal is muscle growth. The three tips we have here are pre-exhaust to improve lagging body parts, force weekly progressions safely, use variable rep ranges. Pre-exhaust to improve lagging body parts. What this means is when you want something to grow and it is stubbornly not growing, one of the reasons why is you might be understimulating that muscle. You could be doing movements that include that muscle, but that muscle isn't being maximally fatigued in those movements. An example that I have personal history with is I have very short upper arm bones for somebody that's 6 foot tall. This means that when I do chest presses, my triceps tend to fatigue before my chest does. Now, this would be true like, I'm not really sure of why it wouldn't be true. So I'll just say 99.9 because you never know. But 99.9% of people with short upper arm bones, their triceps are going to fatigue first in chest movements before their chest will. So if I'm doing chest presses and I want my chest to be maximally fatigued, I can actually pre-exhaust my chest. I can do a bunch of chest flies. So that way my chest is coming into the chest presses pre-exhausted. It's already beat up. It's already fatigued. So that way, as I push my chest presses into failure, I get more and more of my chest being truly maximized. So an example of this is, let's say that when I go into a chest press totally fresh, I'm going to get 100% of what my triceps can do, but only about 70% of what my chest could have really done, meaning my chest could have done more, but my triceps died first. Another example of this would be thinking of deadlift. If you went to do a heavy deadlift, but your grip failed, you couldn't hold the bar anymore. Well, you're not maximally stimulating and developing your deadlifting muscles because your grip is a limiting factor, right? Because your grip can't do anymore, now you can't put any more stimulus into your deadlifting muscles. Therefore, whether they're fully fatigued or not, you just can't train them anymore. So that's when people use wrist straps to help hold on to the bar, and then all of a sudden they can do some extra reps, they can do some extra weight, and then they can maximally stimulate their deadlifting muscles. So for chest press, if I get 100% of my triceps all the time, but only 70% of my chest, if I do chest flies first, I can pre-exhaust my chest enough that it's greater than 30% pre-exhausted. So then when I go do chest presses, my chest actually fails before my triceps do. And now my chest presses have turned into a maximal chest stimulus. So if you're having a body part that's lagging, that's not growing very well, isolate that body part first before you do compound movements. The second tip we have is force weekly progressions safely. What we mean by this is we do need to progress in reps that we use and or weight or exercise technique, like the efficiency and quality of the technique. Something every time we perform a movement needs to progress, needs to improve. The reason why is the first time you perform something, you're going to get a maximal body response. The second time, the body's not going to like it. It's going to feel challenged, but not quite as much as the first time. So you'll get a body response, but not quite as much. The third time, the fourth time, the fifth time you do stuff, it becomes less and less and less of a response. An example I like for this is if I went out and ran a mile, and I'm not a normal runner, and I went out and ran just randomly one day, that'll be awful. You'll feel like crap. You're going to be like, good gosh, you know, I haven't ran it forever. Why in the world am I doing this? Blah, 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 blah. Maybe you take the next day to heal and recover. Then the following day, you go out and you run again. It's still going to be hard, but you're a little more familiar with how it'll feel, right? It's still challenging, but not quite as miserable as the first time because you can kind of expect it. You get proper recovery, you go out and you run again. Proper recovery, you run again. Proper recovery, you run again. The 10th time you run the mile is not anywhere near as miserable as the first time you run the mile. And that means our body is responding less and less and less each time. It has responded well, so that way it feels easy by the 10th time. But the easier and easier it feels, the less and less the body responds. So when we do exercises, and when we repeat them for 2 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row, 4 weeks in a row, if we don't make rep progressions or weight load progressions, or we can't fine-tune our technique to better efficiently focus on the targeted muscle, if we can't improve in some way, our body will not improve as much. So we want to force and really push weekly progressions. One of the tips and tricks you can use is, say you go into the gym and you tried your best, but you just can't seem to add any reps, you can't seem to add any weight. We would actually want to use the techniques of rest pause and or drop sets. Those are two safe techniques that you can use to push a little bit of extra intensity that day, and then you would switch the exercise come the next workout. Now, there's a little bit of leeway to how you do this. You might be able to do the rest pause and drop set for maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks in a row before you have to switch the movement. That's okay. I have clients often when we do drop sets or rest pause, I might even have them do it for 4 weeks in a row because I know the first week they're really just learning it. It's not going to be maximally efficient. And then the second week they're figuring it out. The third week they can really maximize it. The fourth week they're kicking their butt to try to make any progression. So then we move on and we have a new program starting the fifth week. So I have all my clients on a 4 week progressions. Now, rest pause means, say I have 100 pounds and I'm going for 10 reps and I get my seventh rep and I'm like, oh gosh, this is like technique is really breaking down. Rather than doing rep 8, 9, and 10 like total crap, I would actually rest the weight. I would pause for 5 to 10 seconds. Then I would perform the movement again. So maybe I'll get to 7. I know the seventh one wasn't that great. So I'll rest the weight, pause for 5 seconds, then start back up and I'll do reps 8, 9, and 10. And then be done, but 8, 9, and 10 will have been much better quality because I took that small little pause. And that's a way for us to ensure that the quality of the 10 reps was great, like and probably greater than last week, and in terms of like quality, by using that rest pause. A drop set would be, let's say I'm doing aiming for 10 reps at 100 pounds, and after rep number 7, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. I'm so fatigued, but maybe this exercise isn't stabilized. It's not a machine. It's free weight. And you're like, gosh, even if I pause for 5 seconds, I'm going to be like, I'm so exhausted. I might get hurt trying to continue more, or I might not even be able to get the weight back in place. Think of overhead press. So if you get to like 7, you bring the dumbbells back down on your thighs, you breathe for 3 or 4 times, then trying to throw the dumbbells back up into place can be pretty miserable. And might not be safe. You might not even be able to actually do it. So you would do a drop set, which means you would drop weight. You typically drop 10 to 20%. That's a very like basic concept. There's a lot of variability there. But if I did 100 pound dumbbells, I got the 7. Maybe I set those down, grab the 80 pound dumbbells, and I can get reps 8, 9, and 10 now with safer form. So rest pause and or drop sets are great techniques to use that will force some type of intensity progression. So rather than just failing at 7 and being done, you'll force out the extra reps. And then you would say, okay, that was great. It was very intense. I don't think I'd be able to improve on that next week unless I did like a second rest pause or a second drop set. So now I got to switch movements and then restart my progressions. The third tip under muscle growth is to use variable rep ranges. We want to think of building muscle. There's 3 general time under tension ranges that I use for clients. It's 10 to 20 seconds, which is very heavy, and that's typically going to be some muscle growth and strength. Then 20 to 40 seconds of time under tension, which is kind of the sweet spot for muscle growth. Then 40 to 60 seconds of time under tension, which is great for growth in the endurance fibers. Even our endurance fibers, although they're maybe not, you know, super bulky, they can contribute up to 15% of muscle size, total muscle volume and size. So it's still something important to train into and dip into those higher reps at times. Now, when I think of those three time under tension ranges, I think of it as a bell curve. The majority of the work I do is in the middle, 20 to 40 seconds. But there is some work I do in 10 to 20 seconds and some work I do in 40 to 60 seconds. So your reps per set or your time under tension per working set should look like a bell curve. The majority of what you do is in the 20 to 40 seconds, but don't be afraid to dip down into the 10 to 20 seconds or as high as the 40 to 60 seconds. Some people will do even more extreme on the low end, even more extreme on the high end. Sure, you know, as long as you can stay safe, as long as you feel it's effective. But I thought that would just be a nice general kind of way to sum that up and wrap that up that we can comprehend is we have 10 to 20 seconds, then 20 to 40 seconds, then 40 to 60 seconds, and we want that in a bell curve. The last goal we have, I realize now that this podcast is getting quite long, but hopefully it's helpful. So the last goal we have is strength. And the 3 tips we talked about here, I'm going to use a little bit of a shortcut. I know. You know, a little bit of a lazy move here, but it's actually for your benefit. So one of the tips is isometric holds. Another tip is reverse banding. And the third tip is to use proper intensity. Here's the shortcut. The proper intensity tip is better described in podcast 1967. I'll describe it way better there than I would in today's podcast, because it's an entire podcast just for that. So podcast 1967, just a couple podcasts ago, will better explain the proper intensity aspect for strength training. Most people go way too intense on the biggest lifts and not intense enough on the accessories. So we want to balance that out. And that's what podcast 1967 will talk about. If you're familiar with an RPE scale, rate of perceived exertion, in strength training they use scale 1 to 10, but nobody uses 1 to 5. 5 is I'm active, but really not challenging at all. 6 is, some challenge. 7, okay, yeah, it's starting to burn. 8, okay, yeah, that was pretty hard, but I did it safely. 9, that was freaking miserable. My technique started to break down, but I survived. 10 is full send. Maybe you die, maybe you don't. So most people do their main lifts at a 9 or 10 intensity, and then their accessories at like a 6 or 7. We want to normalize at around an 8 RPE. We want to bring down the intensity of our main lifts, squat, bench, deadlift, so that way we can do it with proper techniques, have the proper kind of autopilot. We can grow the proper muscles and the proper pathways, the proper timing. We have the proper kind of neurological stimulus. There's a lot of benefits to why that's helpful to be at an 8 RPE. And then at our accessories, we want an 8 RPE. We want to push a little harder in the accessories than what most people do. So podcast 1967, we'll talk about that in more detail. The other two tips we had were isometric holds and reverse banding. Isometric holds are awesome because they can help overload the connective tissues and our sense of intensity. Two methods of this that I use a lot is, number one is walkout holds for squats. When I'm preparing somebody for a strength meet or event, competition of some kind, if it involves like squats or heavy yoke walks or anything like that, anything that's heavy loaded on the upper back, we'll do squat walkout holds in our training. So I might have them do their warm-ups and squats. They'll do their volume. They'll do their work of the day. And then before they put all the weights away, I'll have them load their squat, like the bar, up to 100% of their one rep max. We'll unrack it. We'll step back in place like we were about to squat it. We'll just breathe and brace and hold for 10 seconds. Then we walk it back into the rack and rack it. That is helpful because picking up 100% of your one rep max, and we'll sometimes go higher up to 110%, that can feel really overwhelming. Especially if the only time you ever feel that is when you're actually going for a max, that can really kind of mess up somebody's confidence. That can scare you. Whereas if we're picking up 100% of our max, 4 to 8 to 12 weeks ahead of the competition, then we're more used to that feeling. So when we unrack it and then we actually plan on moving it, we're familiar with the unracking part. It doesn't shock you. It doesn't surprise you. You step back. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, I felt this before. I'm good to go. And you have more confidence as you go into the actual movement. So isometric holds are great. We'll do that with bench lockout holds as well. So have somebody like spot you. They'll hand it out to you. Make sure you have your safety spotters up. Make sure you don't kill yourself. But you can just hold the top position of the lockout hold, and that's great for getting that intensity as well. If somebody has the ability to set like safety supports properly, we'll actually do slow decentrics, where you'll actually try to lower the bar down and then just let it rest on the rack. You roll, like you get out of that, and then you unload it. So we'll do that sometimes as well. Isometric holds I don't typically use for deadlifting. We'll usually, if somebody has... You really would only be doing that for grip training. You're not really going to be doing that for the perception of how it would feel. You don't hold the lockout of a deadlift super long enough for that to be an issue. If your grip can hold it, usually you're fine. So we don't do isometric holds too often related to getting used to the intensity of a deadlift. Then reverse banding is a second tip. Well, it's actually the third tip because I talked about proper intensity first. So the third tip is reverse banding. This, especially in bench press, love this for bench press, is typically when we bench press, especially when somebody's on the weaker side of bench press, you're at 1.5 times body weight or less. That's not that that's actually that weak, but like I've trained people who can bench 2 times plus their body weight. And at those stages, we do not need to do reverse banding. That would actually be kind of more detrimental to their joints because it would just be such an overload. When somebody's struggling to bench their body weight, or less. Then reverse banding their bench press is great because when you set it up with the proper banding assistance, when the bar is at their chest, it feels near typical what it would without the banding, or maybe 10% less. Sometimes we'll go to 20% less, but we'll say 0% less, like 0% difference up to 10% less. So if you have, I'm just making up numbers, 135 pounds in a bar, you would want to have the banding set up, and I'm going to give this more context here in a second. You want it to feel as though it's still kind of 135 or 10% less, which would be roughly 15 off, so 120 pounds at their chest. So what that does, though, is with banding, you can actually be at the lockout, the unrack, the lockout, the start of the bending of the joints to start the movement. You can actually be up to 10 to 20% overloaded. If we're using 135 pounds as like our target weight, I want them to be able to lift 135. They're struggling with that right now. What I could do is I could set up with reverse banding to where when they unrack the bar, it's around like 145, 155 pounds. They have to get used to feeling that's so heavy. They have to breathe and brace against that weight that's so heavy. They have to take their breath. They have to start to bend their elbows and bring the weight down and kind of have the confidence and work through the lack of confidence and the lack of ability to control that at the top. As they lower, the band is actually going to be reducing some of the weight load that they feel. So it might be 155 at the top, maybe midway it's 135, then at their chest it's 115. Well, 115 is submaximal, meaning they can definitely get 115 off their chest. So they can drive 115 off their chest. Now it's 135, only midway. They can grind through the lockout even at a 155 pound. So this gets them used to lifting something that actually feels greater than their max. Their connective tissues, their muscles, their confidence all has to respond to that. And then when you take away the bands, and you have to do this systematically, but when you take away the bands, as they would practice that, and there's a sequence to do that. You don't just, you know, take away the bands the very next workout. But as you reduce band assistance, as you take away the bands, then when they were to unrack 135, they're like, well, this feels easy because I've been unracking 155. As they lower it down, they've learned proper technique, they've learned proper bracing. Then maybe right at the chest, they go, holy crap, this is really heavy because they've only been doing 115. But they can grind and drive through that, and then all of a sudden, the rest of the lift is easier. So it really addresses confidence, it addresses connective tissue strength, it actually pushes physical development of strength as well. So reverse banding is a great, great, great technique for bench press. Okay, so those were a lot of tips that I hope were helpful for mobility, fat loss, muscle growth, and strength programming. Give those tips a try. If you ever have any questions about programming, like learning templates, or maybe you're a trainer and you want to learn how I coach other trainers to train trainers, if you have any questions like that, check out the services we have on our website. I do business coaching and then also one-on-one coaching. Over half of my clients are personal trainers. I absolutely love it. Really, really enjoy that part of my job. If you have any questions, if you need anything, check out the website. Tons of free information, tons of services. You can always shoot me a message on the bottom of the homepage as well. We have a contact form there. If you like the podcast, if you think stuff like this is helpful, please let me know. It's helpful to get responses from listeners. It's helpful to get feedback. So that way I can continue to create content that's more specific to what everyone likes. So if you like the podcast, please share it. If you like the podcast, please let me know. Just shoot me a message on the website. It's motivational. It's helpful. I like hearing from everybody. It's super fun to hear where people are listening from as well. That's pretty cool as well. But don't be afraid to reach out. I really enjoy hearing from everyone. And then if you like the podcast, you can consider donating to support the podcast, which you can do on our website to help cover all the yearly and monthly costs. And also, if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels. You can find us and follow us on Instagram and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.